Together with American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Frankie Zolfarino over Zoom video. Frankie's in this very dope setup. His lighting is awesome. It's got this like purpley glow to it. It was a great conversation. He talked about growing up in New York and how he got into music. He was a musical theater guy. Actually auditioned for a boy band right out of high school. They were called WOW. He was the first person to be chosen. He was like in a line of people, responded to an ad on MySpace, showed up. Somebody's walking down the line, goes, "Yeah, you, come upstairs." He sang, did a dance, was the first one chosen for this group, and his life changed from there. Had the opportunity to tour around the world, open up for massive artists, but now he is doing his own solo project. Actually, over quarantine, he dug his heels in. He's like, "I'm going to really build my brand." Now he has over 700,000 followers on TikTok. He's doing huge things on Instagram, huge things on YouTube and Spotify. And he just released a brand new song. You have to check it out. It's called Hit That, and it features Melly. And you can watch our interview with Frankie on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Frankie Zolfarino. Hi, Frankie. Thank you so much, man, for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so this is all about you, man. It's
oh, no.
About your journey in music and how you got to where you are now. And, of course, we'll talk about your brand new song as well.
Amazing.
Very cool.
Let's do it.
So are you from New York originally?
I am, born and raised my whole life.
Tell me about that a little bit.
Well, I always tell people, now I don't love it as much because it's so hectic, and you know what I mean? Like, I love to be like somewhere quiet, but if I had kids, I would say like, I would want them to live in New York and be born in New York, because it's just a different lifestyle and everything is fast. And you just learn at a young age, like how to hustle. And I feel like a lot of my journey and my motivation and push, you know, comes from the way that I was raised and where I was born. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with, you know, being from New York. So.
Sure. Sure. Were you in the city? So yeah, I'm sure you were just like immersed in music.
I was actually born in Brooklyn, and no, I was not immersed in music.
Oh, really?
My dad is a retired fireman, and my mom was a medical assistant. Nobody in my family is involved in the entertainment industry, has nothing to do with it. The only thing that I was immersed in music was that my mom loved music. And so when I was in the car, we were always listening to, you know, disco music and music from the 80s. And so I always grew up knowing a lot of music. So people always ask me, like, how do you know this song, like this Motown record or this or that? It's because that's the kind of music that was always being played when, you know, I was at my house or, you know, in the car. But besides that, no musical background.
Oh, wow. Okay. What about piano lessons, anything like that growing up?
Yeah. So I took piano lessons when I was in young, like 10, 11. I stopped because my grandma had passed away and my mom was her caretaker. And when she was taking care of her, like, she couldn't keep up with all the things that I was doing.
Obviously.
So
yeah.
I can play very little. Like, I never play for anyone, but like, you know, I do, like, I could do my warm-ups on there. That's about it.
Okay. So vocals are really your thing. And obviously choreography and dancing.
Yes. So I started dancing at around 11, 12. My mom put me in an all boys hip hop class secretly.
Okay. My kids in hip hop, but are so my 4-year-olds in hip hop class.
Yeah. Cause my dad was like not having that back then. Cause I played sports my whole life, but my mom thought that, like, you know, I had this ability. So she put me into this class, and that's from there. That's literally kind of how everything happened. And then I started doing vocal lessons, and I did a lot of like local, like my school plays and stuff and theater. And then I've never stopped since.
Sure. Well, tell me kind of how the progression went. Like, were you like in musical theater in high school and stuff, or like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I started doing musical theater around the 8th grade. And then I did it all throughout high school. And then I auditioned to be in a boy band when I graduated high school. And that's what led me into this pop music world. And
yeah, because you're in WOW, cool, right?
Wasn't that? What's led me to this point right here?
Wow. Okay. So tell me, if you don't mind talking a little bit about it, but like, so how do you auditioned to get into this boy band, and how did you find this audition? Like, how did this happen?
MySpace.
I imagine you don't have like MySpace, really?
Yes, MySpace. It was like an ad. Do you want to be the next Justin Timberlake? I was like, click.
Of course I do. Wow. So yeah. You were one of many, I'm sure, that said, yes, I want to do
that. Yeah, I was one of thousands. And I went in and I was actually the first person to make the group. I sang and I danced for them. I got a call the next day. It's so funny because it's so difficult now, but how I started was like pure luck. You know, I went on my first audition to be in a boy band and I get the call the next day and I sign a contract.
Oh my God. Is that I'm fast? Like,
why can't life be that easy now?
Sure. Wow. Okay. Well, did you have to like, tell me a little bit about that audition process? If you don't matter, were you like,
I was waiting on a line. This guy walked over and he was like pointed at me and he told me to come upstairs. I was the first person to audition. And I went up there. I sang, oh my God, what song was it? It was a boy band. I love the song. Cause I Want It All or Nothing by O-Town.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. I sang that and you had to dance. I forget the song I danced to. Like I think like a Pitbull song or something that was popular. And the next day I got the call that I made the group.
Wow. That must have been pretty exciting, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
That is nuts.
And my world has been flipped upside down ever since.
What was that phone call like? I'm sure you remember it.
I was at my friend's house. His mom had a chandelier. I was in like the mom's room because I was like trying to, they were all downstairs. I wanted a quiet spot and I jumped up and I remember I hit the chandelier and all the things fell on me.
Wow.
And then it was like just surreal. I just remember like calling my family and they were like, what? Like, and I had to get like an entertainment lawyer, you know, to like look over this contract. And
sure.
It's, you know, that's, and it's been my life ever since. And it's a strange life and not a lot of people can understand it because it is different. I missed out on years that people don't understand. I missed out on the years where you learn and grow to become an adult, because when I would have been doing that, I joined into something that was a whole different world. So, you know, like the simple things in life, you know, like paying your credit card bills and I didn't do any of that. I didn't even have a credit card because, you know, I wasn't handling my money and stuff like right. that. It was very different. And so, you know, my life is just, it's different, you know, it's not the normal life. I try to explain that to people because, I just, you know, the second I graduated high school, I was thrown into
and
I never even growing up, I never had a normal, like from 11, 12 years old, I started doing, you know, music and theater. And that's all that I did. I worked at a dance studio. I danced for a DJ company. I never had like a normal job or worked behind a desk. I never did any of that. This has been my life forever. So I don't know anything else. So people always ask me like, you know, like this, like simple. And I'm just like, huh? I don't even know what you're talking about.
You don't have a fallback. You don't have a plan B.
It's like normal for me. I've been singing and dancing my whole life. Like doing interviews and stuff is not strange to me because it's just been part of what I know. That seems more normal to me than paying a credit card bill or doing my laundry. That's strange to me. I'm like looking at the buttons 20 times. I'm like, am I doing this right? That's stressful for me. This is easy.
That's funny. That is so funny. Well, okay. So once you get in the group, I'm sure that obviously your life changed right there, like on a dime. I mean, then you're what? They're putting you on TV or they're putting you in front of big audiences. Like, how did they kind of push that?
Once I made the group, we did a lot of, it was crazy. Like we hustled hard. We rented, I'll never forget, like a van, and there was five of us and the manager and one of his assistants. And we traveled and we followed the Jonas Brothers around on their tour.
Whoa.
And we stood outside every single concert and handed out flyers until we started like building our fan base and building, you know what I mean? Our,
like your brand,
just our brand. Yes. Yeah. And people would come over to us and take pictures with us. And from there, we started performing at dance competitions and cheerleading competitions and anywhere where there was like a built-in audience. And then from that point on, once we had that built-in audience, everything started to kind of happen. And that was around like 19, and I'll never forget, at 21, I signed my first deal with Live Nation.
Wow.
We signed with Mark Cheatham at CAA, who is now actually like the president, and he represents Justin Bieber and Cardi B. And we started opening up for bigger artists, and we toured in Europe and Canada and a lot of incredible things.
And was that, you went from a theater world, right? I mean, had you ever performed like in front of these sort of audiences and
but I'll tell you the truth. So performing in front of a lot of people, that's easy for me because I did grow up at dance competitions too. So I'm used to being on stage. I don't like performing in front of a small amount of people. So
the more intimate shows
to perform for you right now, my heart would be like, which is odd for other people. Like if you put me in front of thousands, I'm completely fine. If you put me in front of a small group of people, I'm petrified because now we're so close and it's so intimate. Mm-hmm. I'm just so used to like the opposite way. It is strange. Like most people are like, you'd rather that. I'm like, oh yeah. Put me on Madison Square Garden, I'll be fine. You put me, like, you tell me I have to do like a 10 people show and I'm like sweating to death. I'll never forget, actually, it was like an accomplishment for me. 2 years ago, I went to London. I had come out with a single called Stuck on You, and I had a couple of other records out. Mm-hmm. And I decided to do an acoustic performance. Everything stripped down, just me, microphone, my friend who's an incredible pianist, and 15 people. And it was actually, it turned out amazing. It was an incredible night, but I'll never forget like the anxiety going into it. And I had told myself, like, I've got to do this and I got to get over this. Like, mm-hmm. I have to get through this, like this fear of
small setting.
Well, the fear too of, you know, like doing everything big and actually stripping it down, because I grew up idolizing artists like Michael Jackson and Prince and Janet and, you know, Usher and, you know, and so everything in that generation was big, you know, and costumes and dancers. And it's very rare that you'll find even performances of them like acoustic or, you know, like how people do like lounge performances or stripped. That wasn't really like a popular, like even like for artists like Britney Spears, you know. And so now we're in a completely different time era, and performing acoustic and doing things like that is actually more normal than doing the bigger kind of performances, because mm-hmm. most artists now are more, you know, actually acoustic singers and stuff versus bigger performers. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I need to get over this fear because I'm going to have to do this. Like, I'm going to have to perform for 15 people. I'm going to have to do smaller things. Sure. I'm not just going to be at Madison Square Garden tomorrow. And so once I did that, I actually like was like, all right, like I do it actually so much now. I'm always on my TikTok live and just singing, you know, in my basement, especially in quarantine, and singing in my room, and just, you know, realizing that I have to get over the perfectionism and not everything is going to be, you know, done up and perfect, because that's what I personally want.
Right.
But I've learned that people actually don't want it as much. Even like I'll post like a video, I'll always notice, and I think it's amazing. And, you know, it's like a costume and the music is bumping, and I'll get so many comments like, would love to just hear you singing it like in a t-shirt stripped, like, you know, right, without any of this. And I'm like, why? Why do you want that?
There's something about the real, you know, I think that's why TikTok became such a big app, is because it's so real. It's like, hey, yes, I'm just, you know, here in my house. And I think
what I always tell people is what I feel about it is, what I always loved about music was that it the opposite of that. I loved the fantasy of it. Mm-hmm. I loved seeing something that looked like a dream, or seeing things that you couldn't believe were happening. And I loved the shock value and the surprise of it. So like, I loved not knowing what my favorite artist was going to do, you know, at an award show, or not knowing, you know, like I loved the surprise factor and almost the mystery of it. Like I felt there was something exciting about that mystery. So the hump from crossing over from that into, like you're saying, what is happening now. And people literally want to see me like wake up out of my bed, brushing my teeth. And to me, I'm like, what is so good about that? Like, you want to literally just see me brushing my teeth? Like,
it's like the reality show fascination. You know what I mean?
I have millions of views of a video of me doing, I forget, it's something from Dirty Dancing, and I'm literally just brushing my teeth. And then I look at the camera and I'm like, and it has millions of views. And I'm like, this is absolutely psychotic. You know, I've done insane music videos and huge collaborations and, you know, and maybe has 100,000 views. And I go on TikTok, you know, for 50 seconds and 15 seconds and brush my teeth and smile, and millions of people love this. So I'm fascinated by it because I personally don't get it.
Sure.
Again, like everybody is different. So I try to meet somewhere in the middle because I also don't want to lose who I am as an artist and what I want to bring back to music, which mm-hmm. is actually kind of what we're saying. You know, I do want to bring back the costumes and the dancers and the excitement and the flash, because I do feel like you still want to entertain people though. Like, right. Yes, I know people want what's real and they want to see you, you know, cry, and they want to know your mistakes and they want to connect with you, which I understand. And that is the beautiful thing about the internet, is being able to have that mm-hmm. ability to connect with people on a deeper level. But as far as being, you know, a performer and, you know, an artist, you know, I do try to find, you know, the happy median in between both. I try uh-huh. to, you know, give and take, because I've pictured my dream a certain way. And so I'm like, it needs to be that way.
Right. I think we're in kind of a weird time though, because obviously, I mean, if somebody went to a show, like your show, I would think they would expect like the big, you know, performance and the costumes and everything else. Cause if you just came out and you're like, okay, I'm just going to brush my teeth here on the stage and then just do a few songs, like people would be like, what? But it's like, now that everyone's stuck inside, they're more like, you know, intrigued by your day-to-day life. Like, cause it's I'm a guy like you.
Yeah. What I think more than anything, it's about being relatable.
Right.
And that's my biggest issue. I talk to my friends about this all the time because, you know, I always feel like I want to be further in my career and I want to, you know, to touch more people and reach more people. And I study the internet a lot and I watch what people are gravitated to, because it's important to me, because I need, you know, to see what, you know, I need to know what I should do and what I shouldn't do in my career choices. That's very important, especially when I'm investing so much money and time. And what I notice most about it is people love to be able to relate to something. So I always say, like, I wish I would have done it a different way. I wish I would have joined, you know, like the New York City Fire Department. I wish I would have became a fireman and I would have become the singing fireman. And I would have been your everyday guy, right, who's saving lives and who happens to sing on the side. And from that, I already know that people, because I've seen it happen, like the doctor who dances is more fascinating to people than the person who dances as a profession.
Yeah, I see.
You get
saying.
It? Because you don't expect the doctor to dance. You don't expect the fireman to sing, but you expect me to sing. So it's not as exciting. It doesn't intrigue you in as much, because you're like, well, he's a singer and he lives this kind of life that I can't relate to. That's why people love, you know, relationships, and when people are, you know, who's breaking up with this one and that one, because they're connecting to it, because maybe that's going on in their own life, or mm-hmm. you know, your everyday mom who's struggling and hustling, you know, and you know, is trying to figure out, you know, how to be a mom and still, you know, have her own life and how to deal with kids and have fun. And people are attracting to that mm-hmm. versus you know, a person who's on their page and, you know, they maybe they're singing their heart out and they have all the talent in the world, but if they're not connecting to you, they're going to just keep scrolling. And so that's been, you know, the biggest hump for me is, you know, finding that happy middle place of, you know, is finding that where I can relate to people, because like I said to you before, my life is so different.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm not a dad and I'm not a husband and I, you know, don't work your everyday 9-to-5 job. And so I don't have that same connection with, you know, to a lot of people that live that kind of life. So right. It's definitely very interesting. And yeah, I've learned a lot in quarantine for sure. That's definitely helped my career. It really has. And I try to like voice it to my friends who are singers or people that I know that are trying so much. And I'm like trying to explain to them like that, yes, you have the most amazing voice in the world and you're incredible what you do. But if people can't connect with you, they kind of will just keep scrolling past. And that's just, you know, because there's so much for them to choose from now. Mm-hmm. You know, if you could look at my video for 5 seconds and then swipe and there's 10 million after me to come. So right. How do I keep you on my video? You know, that's always the goal. You know, sure. How do I keep you there? And then in return, turn you, you know, make you watch my other videos and become a fan and become part of my dream with me. So.
Yeah, I think it's definitely totally with quarantine, it's totally taken a totally different turn now too, especially with the industry. Instead of like putting a record out and trying to be out in, you know, the public eye, trying to promote it. Now it's everything's got to be done digitally, or you got to do meetings like this. Like it's just such a different world now. I'm fascinated by like going from, you know, wow, being in this a group of people to then going as a solo artist. Was that a difficult transition?
Oh, this has been the toughest thing I've ever done in my life. I tell everyone it's nothing of what it seems. Like this, right? This seems nice, but it's nothing like this. You know, it's definitely, it's very stressful. You deal with so much negativity, so many no's, so many obstacles, so many people, you know, telling you this isn't going to happen. And, you know, and everything's changing on top of it by the instant. So, you know, the second one thing is moving, something else is happening. And it's to keep up with it is difficult. And I've dealt with so much just anxiety and stress and to the point where I've literally like lost my hair. Because what people don't realize too is like this, there is no other, like I don't have a plan B or another option or, you know, if this doesn't work out, I'll do this. Like this is my life. And I do feel like I have a calling, like, and it's haunting to me because if I could give it up, I'll be honest, I would give it up in a second because it's not worth all the other stuff that you have to go through. It's just not really. The mental, I'll be seeing a therapist for the next 30 years after this career choice. The mental health is not worth it, but I love it so much and that makes it worth it. So it sounds like it's like an odd thing because mm-hmm. I tell people every day, I have two, you know, nieces, my sister has, you know, two little girls and they're like, do you want them to do this? I'm like, I pray to God that they don't want to do this. I pray to God every day they don't want to do this. If they want to and they are obsessed with it and they love it as much as I do, I would support them 100%. But it's not worth it unless you truly, you know, love it with every ounce of, you know, of who you are. Because I was willing to give up. That's what people don't, they see all of this, but they don't see everything that I gave up to get to this point. Sure. You know, like I've missed out on family birthday parties and weddings. And I've lost friends over the years because, you know, I don't have the time to hang out with people. I've every dollar that I've ever made, you know, all of my jewelry that I have on is fake because I sold all of my jewelry from when I was a kid to do my first two music videos right into gold. My family still asks me till this day, like, where's that cross that your grandma gave you? I was like, I think it's in my room somewhere. I'm thinking like that thing has been melted years ago. You know, I've went into massive credit card debt and like, you know, things that I've never told people, you know, that because I'm always smiling through it and making it like everything is great and glamorous. You know, because at the end of the day, there's always worse problems and people always have it worse than you. And, you know, I'm not going to say that, you know, because I chose this. It's not like, you know, it was something that I had to do. Well, it was a choice. You know, I chose to swipe that credit card till, you know, it couldn't go anymore. And I chose to not go to this. And I chose to not be with my family for this. And I made those decisions. But, you know, you've seen so many celebrities have such a dark story. And, you know, like they've, you know, a lot of them have spoken up about it now. Right, I know a lot of people have seen like Demi Lovato and, you know, and so when you look at that, I always ask people, especially on TikTok, because everybody wants to be famous, no matter what anyone says, they do.
Yeah, of course.
They want to be famous.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to live, you know, the American dream and have everybody love them. And I actually, that's where people mistake what I want. That comes with my dream. Like, I want to perform for millions of people. I want to perform at Madison Square Garden, and I want to sing at the Super Bowl, and I want to, you know, have the whole world singing these songs with me. But I don't actually want the other part of it. Like, I don't want to have to walk around and have no privacy. And I don't want my whole life constantly being, you know, observed by people. And every mistake you made is, you know, seen and picked apart. And every word that you say, I could say something on this and you could flip it and put it in another sentence. And it could be look like right. I'm the worst person in the world. Right.
Of course.
And and, you know, and that's
which I would never do to you, by the way.
Thank you. That's the part of social media that I always wonder, like, when I'm scrolling and I'm seeing this, not to be mean, but a lot of the people that want this fame, they don't want it because they're talented. They don't have a talent. Like, they're not a singer or a dancer or, you know, or an actor, an actress. A lot of people are just normal people who are becoming, right. you know, creators, like, and they want to live like the Kardashians, you know, and, you know, become famous, you know, by being socialites or, you know what I mean? To me, I'm always just like, oof, you don't know what you're getting yourself into, because it's a very dark, dark, dark world. And I honestly genuinely do it because I love it so much. And
you're very talented.
My dream.
To boot, you know what I mean? It's not like you're not
and
good.
Also because I've worked way too fucking hard to let it go at this point.
Right. Well, I want to get back to your music real quick because I love what you're doing. I'm curious where you were when this whole coronavirus thing hit. Because speaking of stuck on you, you know, you said you had to do that really intimate performance and that was terrifying. And like, I mean, like, what you were probably going out and doing big shows, and then this virus hits, and your whole career and mindset had to switch.
I planned on going to Europe for 6 months before this virus hit, and I was meeting with a huge agency to open up for huge, huge artists. I was in Europe for everything set up. I was going to be there for 6 months. I was going to record there. I was going to go on tour there. I go for 1 week, 7 days. And on the fifth day, my sister calls me and tells me that I have to come home. And I'm like, no, 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 no. That's not happening. Like, we're not doing this shit. And I didn't do it. I didn't come home. I kept being like, this is still a hoax. Like, I don't care. I'm not doing it. I'm staying. On the seventh day, they were literally shutting down flights, banning everything.
Oh, right.
And my family was like calling me like hysterical crying. Like, if you don't come home today, you're not coming back here. Like, they're not going to let you come back.
Yeah. People were super scared about that. Cause they're like, we're closing the border down. Sorry.
Yeah. And like, I just remember breaking down. I was hysterical crying and getting onto the plane and coming back home. And I made a promise to myself when I got back the day after. And I said, I could either say, woe is me for how long this is going to be, or I can make shit happen and figure this out another way. And I did. And if I'm proud of myself for one thing, it was what I did in my quarantine. I hustled and worked while everybody was laying down and crying and eating. And I started buying equipment, and I bought microphones, and I bought studio systems, and I built, you know, a little studio inside my closet, and I started doing Zoom sessions, and I got on TikTok, and I did over 40 to 50 live concerts for free, like, just constantly. Like, I set my garage on fire. I have a burn mark on my back because I put pyro in my garage to do a Jennifer Lopez TikTok. I got noticed by some of the biggest celebrities, you know, during, yeah. you know, this year.
Which is incredible. I mean, just looking at the names that have, you know, Janet Jackson and Paula Abdul. Yes. And like, I mean, that's insane.
I set my mind to something and it worked and I did it strategically. People didn't realize I was doing it strategically, but I was. And I resold. I had merch. When I tell you I've had merch for 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. I sold more merchandise in one day this year than I did in a previous 10 years combined. Wow. I first sold out of all of my merch that I had never sold before. And then I made new merch in between. Uh-huh. You know, I built my numbers from 50 followers to 700,000.
That's insane. And
I just literally, I worked really, really hard. I did things very specifically. I waited for the right time to, you know, I purposely didn't release any music because I knew I couldn't perform the song. So I only remade covers. But while I was remaking the covers, I was making new music. And just putting everything into a folder and saving everything and rebuilding my brand. And it was crazy. And it changed my life.
Because it looks like you've done quite a few covers. I'm looking at your Spotify. But now you have a new song, like you're ready to start releasing music again.
Yeah. Because you know, the thing is, and people will always say like, you know, you got to stop doing covers and this and that. And I'm like, it's part of my plan. Trust me.
Right.
Because I don't want to release a new song, you know, and this is, again, why release an original record as an independent artist if you don't have fans? Because my point is, you're not going to get them. People aren't going to miraculously type in a name that they don't know. They're not going to type in a name of a song they don't know. The chances of your song going viral, you know, could happen, but it's, you know, 1%. It's not really realistic.
Right.
So I wanted to wait for the right time. I wanted to build everything enough and build the hype, you know, before I release something and make sure that it was done right. And I knew that this was the time and I had made people wait enough and everybody is so excited and they're like dying to hear it. And I'm like, it's time to give them this music. And so, I had a lot of songs to choose from. It was a hard pick.
Yeah.
But I'm like, which one's going first? And I am so excited about it. I, you know, I have a artist that I collaborated on the record with. Her name is Melly.
And tell me, how did you guys link up? And was it done via Zoom? Like, was the song written like this?
So what happened was I had this record, right? And again, I was trying to be smart because this being smart is a new thing for me. I usually make dumb decisions, just so you know. You know, and I look at things in a realistic way. And that's what I always try to tell people. People will say, don't be negative about this. Some of them being negative. I'm being realistic. I'm a male pop artist, you know, and if you go look at the charts, you're going to notice that most of the records charting, at least the popular ones, even if you go on TikTok, is going to be a lot of hip hop and rap. You know, that is popular right now. People love that. And so, you know, on top of me being, you know, a male pop artist who sings and dances, which could to some people already look slightly cheesy, you know, if they look at it that way, because I am old school. So I was like, you know, I'm not going to put out this record unless, you know, I feel like I add a stamp on this to take it to the next level, because I need to get more people. I need to open my brand even more. I need to reach, you know, a younger audience as well. And so I had told my managers and stuff that we needed a feature. I was not putting a record out without a feature. I just wasn't doing it. And so we went through so many people, so many artists, and some people turned it down and some people weren't available. Some people were just way too expensive. and they had sent me Melly's Instagram page. They're like, do you know this artist? I've heard of her before. I don't really know much about her. I went on her page and I was like, wow, like she really is, like she has a great vibe for this record that I was putting out. Like I could tell like her energy and stuff. Like she reminds me of like Cardi B meets Rihanna. And that's like what was intriguing to me about it. And I loved her look and her style and stuff. And so my manager knew someone that worked on her team, and they sent them the record, and they loved it instantly. And they were like, I completely get it. And we think that she can kill this and take it to the next level. And I just remember being like, yeah, like, that's it. Let's do it. Because everything to me is about just a feeling. So if I send you my stuff, right, and you're kind of like about it, but you come back to me 2 weeks later and then you're excited, I'm not sure if I want to do the deal, because I work upon a passion and a feeling. And so, like, if I walk into a record label meeting, I want them to love me instantly. I don't want to have to fight for them to love me, because they're not going to push me as hard then, because I'm not going to be their number one, because they're not going to have that burning passion to watch me succeed. You know what I mean? If they feel like they're doing me a favor. And so the feature, the having a collaboration on the record was important, that the person loved it as much as I did, because I want them to push it and believe in it, you know, as much as I do. And so that's what sold me instantly, was that they got it. They got the idea and the vision that I had for it. And then when they sent me back the verse, I just lost my mind, because I felt like it took my record from here to here. And of course, that's the goal, you know, is to make it better. And just super grateful. We did, we shot the video in LA, and
I love the video. I've had a chance to see it.
Oh, you saw it?
Yeah. I was going to see if you could have, yeah, it's rad. It's really rad.
Thank you. And so I wanted to do like a 2000s inspired, like Missy Elliott, Puff Daddy.
Oh, totally Missy Elliott. Oh yeah. Yes. Okay.
That was my inspo. Actually the version you have, I think I lost you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
The version you have, I made like three small edits. I'm waiting to get them back, but it is
very simple. Okay.
Because I'm psychotic. That's really why. Because I see the smallest things. I'm like, we need to fix that little second. They're like, why? I'm like, I can't look at it now. Right. I'm super excited about the video release. And, you know, I just hope that people love it as much as I do. And that, you know, and that my fans love it. Because at the end of the day, that's why I do what I do, is for my fans and the people who are going to come watch me and listen to me. You know, when I'm in the studio, I think about that. I think about them. What do they want? Because that is who, you know, I'm gearing towards, or it's, you know, it's people, you know, I want people to sing and dance with me at the end of the day and make them happy.
I love it. Well, the video is so dope. The song is dope. And I can't wait to hear the rest of the songs that you have. I mean, you said that you've got a plethora ready to release over the quarantine. So I can't wait, man. And I really appreciate you doing this. I do have one more question for you, even though you've been spouting so many amazing gems throughout this entire conversation. But do you have any advice for aspiring artists?
Yeah. Oh my God. Of course. I would say, stay true to yourself. I made a lot of mistakes with that. You know, you got to sell who you are, but you also do have to not be stubborn and listen to people that have done it before. Take their opinions into consideration. Always know that there is someone better than you. There is someone working just as hard as you. So just to stay humble and remember why you chose to do this in the beginning. You know, I always look back at like myself as the 12-year-old kid that, you know, this chubby kid on stage, you know, singing in musical theater that, you know, had this dream to entertain the world. And it's important for me to remember that person and who I was, because, you know, it keeps you level-headed, and it keeps you focused, and it also makes you appreciate, you know, the thing, what we do have and how far I am. And though well, I'm not where I want to be yet, look at the amazing people that I'm getting to work with and the people that I'm able to do interviews with and the opportunities that are handed to me. You know, it's still a gift and a blessing. And so, you know, I would just say to anybody that's, you know, going, you know, on this journey, and, you know, just to love it with everything you have, and always remember it's about the people, it's about the fans. You know, at the end of the day, a person sitting behind the desk is not buying your record. They're not buying your t-shirt. They're not coming to see you perform. And so people always ask me what my biggest trick was. It wasn't really a trick. I always told people, I'm not going to let a music executive, one person sitting behind a desk, tell me what my fate and my destiny is. because it's just one person's opinion and you're going to get a lot of no's before you get one yes. And so focus on your brand and focus on touching people's lives and focus on connecting with your fans, you know, and letting them know that you appreciate them and doing things with them to keep them engaged and to keep them excited about what you're doing and share your journey with them and share your mistakes, because it's inspiring to people. You know, if I know that my, you know, someone that I idolized or one of my artists that I looked up to was maybe going through the same thing that I did or had the same, you know, the same disappointments, and it makes me feel better because it makes me feel like I can do this. You know what I mean? Like, if they did it, I can do it too. And so, yeah, that would definitely be my, you know, my advice to anybody at the end of the day, you know, is to, you know, it's always about the people, and that's why we do what we do, right? Like, I sacrifice my happiness sometimes to bring joy to thousands of other people, you know? And so, and it sounds like a crazy line and it's strange, but it is also rewarding because, you know, I have a box sitting, you can't see it, but it's over here. I have a box of thousands of letters, boxes everywhere. And I could actually show you like some one thing that my fans have made me. It's a picture of me with thousands of fans on it. And
that is dope.
When you look at things like that at the end of the day, the fact that you could touch people's lives, how special is that, from all over the world and change people and maybe get people out of depression or make them feel good about themselves, whatever it is. I always say that, you know, when I'm having a rough patch or I want to give up or, you know, I'm just like, I can't do this anymore, I literally will take down this box and I'll start looking at, you know, these letters and read them and remind myself like, wow, like how special is this? In my lifetime, I was able to leave a mark on someone else's heart. And so I think that there's nothing more special than that. You know, like a trophy, a medal, an award doesn't compare to actually being able to have an effect on another person's life. So